from South Carolina Public Radio, this is the South Carolina Lead. I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode was recorded on December 2nd, 2024, from South Carolina Public Radio Studios here in Columbia. And a programming note, yes, we are back, but we have our next live lead taping on January 9th, 2025. Put this on your calendar now. Things are going to get crazy during the holiday season, so I want this on your calendar now. We'll be streaming on YouTube if you can't make it, but we want to see you. We want to see you. We want to hear you. We want to hear you. This will be our legislative preview episode, and I'm hoping slash expecting to have a big name guest. I cannot say anymore. I've already said too much. And that will be our 590th episode. So we need you there for it. And we're going to open registration to this free event soon, but I want this on your radar now. Where's my attaché case? January 9th, SCE TV Studios here in Columbia. That's our next live lead taping. Hope to see you there. AT, have you seen my attaché? Yeah, I know. I know. I just said January 9th. It's an attaché case. Has a little over the sea. Now, on this episode of The Lead, we look at what lawmakers will be doing when they return to Columbia this week. There's also the protest hearing for the contested State Senate District 29 race that's taking place on December 3rd. And we hear from two professors about more ramifications from election 2024, including the role social media played, as well as how the geopolitical economy could shift. Now we're talking to a lot of people, but we want to talk to you as well. Aww. And you can do that by calling us at 803-563-7169. We love hearing from y'all. We can't call you. We will talk about you when you call us. And we'll talk about whatever you want to talk about. That's right. Leave us a message. And, you know, whatever's on the top of your mind, how your Thanksgiving was. We had all those hot takes about Thanksgiving. It's now December, the last month of the year. We've got to start talking about resolutions for 2025. So leave us a message, 803-563-7169. Resolve to call. Look at what's on tap this week in the State House. Lawmakers in both the House and Senate will briefly return to Columbia this week for their reorganizational sessions. I'll have more on that for you in a moment. Looking at the governor, we don't have his full schedule for the week, but Monday evening he was set to participate in the Greenville County Legislative Delegation's meeting in Greenville. A nice get there, having a big name there. Up in Congress, they're back in session for the final 3 weeks of their lame duck session. The 118th Congress is wrapping up. And look at the economic calendar. We get November's jobs report on Friday morning. We'll have the details when we do the Saturday podcast. Not the numbers. You guys, Kai Rizdahl. The state Senate and House elections are over. Well, actually, the South Carolina State Board of Canvassers will meet December 3rd at 10 a.m. for a protest hearing by Senator Gerald Malloy over the state Senate District 29 election results. Malloy lost to Republican newcomer J.D. Chaplin, but vote total irregularities were found during the automatic recount of the race that was triggered due to the results being within 1%. The initial vote total for the two candidates was 49,729, and the recount total was 49,642. A little bit different there, so they're going to hammer those out. There could possibly be another election. We'll find out after December 3rd. While the outcome of that race is still being finalized, other members of the House and Senate will be back in Columbia for some perfunctory activities, including picking their new desks and committee assignments. This is basically like the first day of school here, folks, before January 14th, which is the first day of school session. That's when it starts. Now, we'll find out who was on what committee. There could be some changes in leadership and more. Again, it's a lot of nitty-gritty stuff, insider baseball. But these moves made here will have ramifications on how legislation does or does not move in the coming session. You can follow along by watching the action on SCE TV World or on scstatehouse.gov. That is your go-to statehouse resource. But we're also going to have play-by-play and some details on southcarolinapublicradio.org. We're going to be launching our daily legislative blog, folks. You'll be able to follow along there if you're not big on the social medias. southcarolinapublicradio.org will have it all there. Now, the House is in at 11 a.m. on December 3rd and the Senate at noon on December 4th. Now, the Joint Bond Review Committee met on Monday and voted against the future of I-526. That's because they don't have any money for it. That's right. They voted to revoke the authorization that would have allowed the South Carolina Transportation Infrastructure Bank to provide $75 million for the preliminary costs of that project. That's because last month, voters said no to renewing a half-cent sales tax that would fund road projects, including extending I-526. So, Lowcountry voters have spoken, and now the Joint Bond Review Committee has also spoken. So enjoy those roads down in the Lowcountry. They're not changing right now. As we continue to put a bow on election 2024, I wanted to include some recent conversations about important aspects of the election, including the role of social media and the geopolitical ramifications of Donald Trump winning a second term. First up is Dr. Brandon Boatwright, who is over Clemson University's Social Media Listening Center. What is that? What does it do? And what do they pick up on during the election? Well, here's Brandon.
We're housed in the Department of Communication, but we're in an interdisciplinary lab on campus that listens, measures, and engages in social media conversations from millions of different sources of online conversation. Mm-hmm. And that ranges from, you know, your conventional social media platforms like Twitter, X, Facebook, Instagram, Reddit, you name it, from that standpoint. But it also includes things like the blogosphere and how, you know, impactful that can be. Online videos, podcasts, we're able to scrape any form of digital data, apply various metrics to it, and help us to understand and unpack what's happening there.
Yeah, and what's the need for that? Is it just because the media landscape has become so fragmented over the past, you know, 5, 10, 15 years that you need to start kind of getting a better gauge on what's going on out there, especially when we talk about politics?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, the need for social listening transcends any discipline. You know, with the work that we do on campus, right, even though we're housed in communication, the work that we do in social media bleeds into public health, nursing, sociology, even environmental sciences, you know, you name it. We work with faculty to study the adoption rates of electric vehicles in the southeastern United States. We work with clinicians in healthcare settings to determine what are some of the ways in which people are responding to viral challenges on TikTok that wind them getting into the hospital. Mm-hmm. So there's a wide range of applications for this, and it's because we can do so much with social media data. And as you mentioned, the landscape changes, it's fragmented so much. Having a tool to be able to sift through just the cacophony of everything that's happening online, mm-hmm. you know, is really critically important to folks at Clemson and beyond.
And I think this, I know you're talking about a broad range of applications here too, but when we're talking about politics and look at the election, it seems like yeah. so much of that also was happening on different platforms, like, you know, the streaming platform Twitch, or, you know, even like YouTube, or even on Telegram. Does it become harder to get into some of those conversations, or is it, are you still looking pretty much at those big ones that are happening on platforms like Twitter and places like Facebook?
You know, when we talk about the social media landscape shifting, we're not just talking about how people use it. We're talking about, you know, the extent to which certain platforms allow data to be accessed. So certain platforms like Snapchat, Twitch, you know, we don't get as much data from those platforms just by nature of the data that's there. Mm-hmm. But from what we are able to gather, we look at behavioral trends. We layer that on top of demographics, psychographic information to help us get a better picture of how people are responding to and engaging with political commentary. Mm-hmm. One of the things that was really noteworthy and important just in this last cycle was looking at how young men gravitated toward podcasters and influencers and how much that actually impacted their information processing throughout the cycle.
For a little bit more than 2 weeks out from the election, what were some of the big takeaways, some of the big trends, some of the things that you all found through your social media listening throughout the election cycle?
So, you know, on social media, you know, it's really common to see, you know, mainstream news platforms generating a lot of engagement. And that's something that we see on a traditional election night or let's say a debate night or something along those lines. But something that's always interesting or has interested me throughout this past cycle is the prominence of influencers in these spaces who have actually outgrown the engagement rates that historical legacy media have started to, you know, see more of a trajectory in that direction, right? So things like, you know, Joe Rogan as a podcaster and the importance of his channel and his endorsement of President-elect Trump certainly spoke to that. And I think that there's a lot to be said about, again, kind of this resistance to mainstream narratives. And now we're taking more of a influencer, opinion leadership.
Outside approach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
which I think can be a little worrisome too. I mean, you're talking to someone who's in, you know, you could say quote unquote mainstream news here, and, you know, obviously we uphold a certain set of ethics and, you know, standards, and that's not always the same thing from your other podcasters or other folks who are not in journalism per se. And that's not a bad thing. Of course, we want a diversity of voices here, but it's also worrisome because you don't know who's supporting those people. You don't know how much of the content that they're getting could be from some other sources. Maybe it's AI generated. That is probably something also that you all were looking into in terms of just the growth of how information is out there now in terms of even misinformation and what is coming from people like those in the typical mainstream media press to those who are trying to make it work and maybe using AI generated content that we don't know anything about.
Absolutely. You know, and when social media and Twitter in particular kind of came about, we had this kind of pie in the sky vision of, oh, it is going to be this democratic space. Right. And in a sense, it can be, you know, with everything kind of all things being ethical, right, and all things being true. But when you add in things like artificial intelligence, nefarious actors, and the proliferation of content that is designed to be intentionally misleading, or, you know, the fact that a lot of folks just don't have the digital media literacy to recognize when something is not true, and they unintentionally spread information. But the important thing here is that social media provides such low barriers to entry into the conversation that when people plug in and spread information, whether intentionally or unintentionally, anyone has the ability to become an influencer, depending on what you share and how it resonates.
All right, let's go, Brandon. I think that's not a political thing to say, right? No, I'm just kidding. Please, don't wear that to the polls. Again, in terms of balance of the podcast, we had our Clemson Tiger right there. Now we got a University of South Carolina Gamecock coming on here, folks. Again, we taped this before the big Palmetto Bowl win, and we'll talk about that in the wind down.
No birds.
But I want you, again, to do what Brandon was talking about there and verify the information you see on social media and elsewhere. Look at official sources and other credible media outlets if you don't see it there. I'm not saying it's not true, but be suspicious and question its validity. When looking at geopolitical ramifications of the election and international business, including the international economy, which South Carolina plays a huge part of, guys, we talk about the ports, we talk about these huge manufacturers in our state, as well as the role of agriculture here. Now, to do all that, I spoke with Dr. Jerry McDermott, who chairs the International Business Department at the Darla Moore School of Business at the University of South Carolina. I opened our conversation by talking about the potential ramifications of these tariffs that Trump has proposed on goods from China and Europe.
There's a couple of ways to look at this. First of all, when we're thinking about China per se, and then we can get into the EU, don't think about just final goods. Think about what we call global value chains. So it's these intermediate goods or parts of machinery or semiconductor systems. Now, the Chinese aren't as leading in semiconductors, and that's another conversation. But the point is that it's not only final goods. And we saw the disruption in COVID. So during COVID, value chains across the world were disrupted. And what that meant is that companies couldn't get the components or the subsystems that went into their final goods. What did this do? It delayed product. It has also increased their price, right?
Vehicles.
Yeah, really vehicles were really jammed up, but it's your computer systems could be jammed up. All of your domestic goods inside your kitchen or your TVs. These are the type of things that need lots and lots of components. Look, even footwear, right? You know, footwear, probably there's a study I was looking at, 200 people probably work on a simple sneaker.
Okay.
Yeah, running shoe, right? So the point is that once you start to lay in a place like, lay into a country like China, it's not just like their direct exports. What's happening is that other value chains will be impacted. Now, the question is, how does that adjust? Well, there'll be increase of price and delays, but there'll also be diversion. And who's gonna take advantage of it? So if there's also a tit for tat, going to your point right now. So for instance, what do we know? We have a trade agreement with Canada and Mexico since 1994, right? The NAFTA. And we know also that Mexico is importing cars, or you could say exporting into Mexico. And under certain agreements, those cars, and then they're building those cars too. And so if they meet the content agreements, those cars can go into the United States. By the way, here's the interesting thing. Go back to Japan bashing in the 1980s. I don't know if you remember yourself, but Richard Gephardt and team were there in the mid-early 1980s up on Capitol Hill taking a sledgehammer to different Japanese like boomboxes, right? This was the classic image because the Japanese were exporting heavily into the United States and we weren't allowing the, being allowed into their markets. So what happens? There's a number of tariff issues and negotiations, and that led to Japanese foreign direct investment heavily into the US. So then that was a very interesting adjustment over a 10 to 15 year period. By the way, South Carolina has been a big beneficiary of that. So what we're gonna see also is that what has already started about 10 years ago, Chinese companies are really launching into foreign direct investment around the world, including the United States, right?
But there's also a little bit more pushback because of the Chinese being our adversary as a spy and all those issues.
So that's, I mean, that's the new element.
Yeah.
And that is the new element. But I don't think, so that my point is that you, when you look at the pros and cons of what could happen, Republican-led states are benefiting from Chinese investment and Chinese technology.
And EV investment too.
Right, right. No, no, no. But I'm saying like, you know, look at Georgia, look at Ohio. They have great investments in renewable energy technologies with major Chinese companies. No one's worried about that right now, it appears. And they're joint ventures too. So what I'm saying in terms of the politics of that is that, you know, you do have stakeholders inside the United States who are saying maybe we don't want to have the import competition, but in terms of joint investment, maybe there can be some movement for that.
So it's easier to say we're going to slap big tariffs on things versus actually realizing how it affects.
Yeah, you're going to have trade diversion. I think the other thing that you're talking about too is if there is real impact on certain types of agro products, yes, then you can bet Argentina and Brazil are going to benefit tremendously.
I kind of want to pivot to, you know, that kind of security issue when you're talking about the role of China, Russia, North Korea is playing and all that, and how you feel America might maybe change its approach to these wars, to how we center ourselves on the global stage, and how that could have ramifications when it comes to economy.
Let me bring some of this stuff back to home.
Yeah.
Right. But before we pivot to security, I was remiss in not mentioning something more particular to South Carolina in all these discussions, because this is about South Carolina, this program. South Carolina is consistently among the top five states in the union for the last 25 years in every indicator of the internationalization of the economy. That means trade, that means jobs from trade, foreign direct investment, jobs from foreign direct investment, et cetera. Right? We're a leader in that. So anything that disrupts international markets is a very big disruption for the South Carolina economy, right? So that's one of the things that's going to be interesting to see how South Carolina is maneuvering in Washington to deal with these issues. And don't forget, our biggest markets are the EU. Mexico is another big relation. Canada and China is still a big player too, and Japan. So, but on the security arrangements, I think the biggest issue, we can frame it like this. How will people see the new administration in terms of its consistency and confidence in its commitment to prior decades of security agreements and security relationships? So as told to me by high-level people in Asia, particularly in Korea, all eyes are on how they react to certain issues with commitments to allies and in the Ukraine. And the implications, and by the way, this is not just, you know, that in private conversation, you find out that there are scenario planning happening in a number of think tanks on global security. It goes like this: will there be basically a proliferation of nuclear weapons? That would be the basic point that was rammed home to me many times. And the reason why this is an issue, potentially, is that if countries feel that the collective security arrangements, and particularly with the United States, are uncertain, they have to, you know, it's everyone for themselves. And so there are already arrangements to acquire weapons, even in secret. And I think that's the biggest issue right now. Do things fragment and create an uncertainty so that people start doing things that they would never think of doing before?
That was Dr. Jerry McDermott, who chairs the International Business Department at the Durham Moore School of Business at the University of South Carolina. And don't worry, folks, we're going to have more business talk, including the 2025 economic outlook, when we talk to Dr. Joey Von Nessen later this month. Stay tuned. Welcome to the wind down section, our little break from the news. We're glad you're here, A.T. Shire, lead producer. I'm glad to see you again after the Thanksgiving break.
Thank you, Gavin, and go birds. Say it back, please. Go birds, say it back, please.
Fly, fly.
Thank you very much. Yes, that's yes, good enough. Listen up.
But he puts the gun down. Okay, he
yes,
said his words.
He said it.
A.T., before we get into more details in sports talk
go
here.
Go birds, yes.
You had quite the harrowing break.
Oh, God. I didn't know we were going to talk about this.
I didn't mean to talk about if this, you, but here we go.
If you can hear it, I was, I'm getting over a sickness, an illness.
He was down with the sickness.
I was down with, ooh, I got that drop. Hold on, right here. There we go.
oh, that's good refreshing.
I got that. Don't worry. So, yeah, I was sick. Thanksgiving was canceled.
Hummusgiving, your hummus bird.
They'll cancel anything nowadays, you know? didn't get to have my hummus bird. It was very sad. I couldn't taste only because my nose was so stuffed up.
Yeah.
I didn't have COVID, but it had all the absolute hallmarks of COVID, you know, real best of both worlds type stuff. Baby was sick. Wife was sick. Parents were sick. It was great.
Tis the season.
But you know what is also sick, Gavin? Getting calls.
Hey,
getting calls from these people. Are you ready?
We love a call.
Great friend of the pod and great friend of mine personally. Okay. Here we go.
Gavin AP, it's your good buddy CJ. I am calling from my backyard. Just got done listening to the latest lead, letting Matty Ice, my dog, do her little nightly business. Just calling to let you know that I actually am cooking the Popeye's turkey this year. AT knows I just had my third little gal, so I cannot spend time hours outside cooking a turkey because we have a newborn. But I'm going to be doing that turkey this year. I will report back on how it goes. Thanksgiving Day food rankings. I got to agree with AT, the whole can of cream of mushroom inside green bean casserole to turn off. But hard disagree on mac and cheese being underwhelming. My wife makes a great one. Anyways, y'all have a good one. I'll be listening. Since I'm out on paternity leave, I may catch up on a few that I haven't listened to. And hope you guys have a good one. Bye.
CJ, thank you for calling us, especially while you're out there with your Popeye's turkey, which I've been dying to get.
Yeah, we're jealous. We're jealous.
Also, you know, the mac and cheese, we weren't necessarily hating.
We didn't say it was underwhelming. We just said you can get it whenever. It's not special to Thanksgiving. Also, congrats on the baby.
Yes, a third turkey.
Third Popeye's, okay?
Well, you get three, you get the turkey when you're bowling, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Three strikes, you get a turkey.
Yeah, that's a turkey. There's a joke in there. Someone write in, call in with the joke.
Can we just talk about putting your fingers in a communal bowling ball? Like, my God, how did we not have COVID before?
Pre-COVID. Pre-COVID stuff.
I have my own little grips.
Not
my individual
not
fingers.
Just would you put your fingers in the bowling ball, but the you shoes. Would like you would like the shoes. You would eat wings or pizza.
Oh, let me just get back
while you're doing it. Disgusting.
We have to have a lead bowling event. I am not that great at bowling, but yeah, let's do all these things.
Not even sometimes.
I mean, I've gotten a turkey, but go ahead.
Normally I'm terrible. Normally I'm under 100. I'm like straddling.
Really?
I'm like 98,
like you would be good at bowling.
99. One game.
Yeah.
I bowled a 220. And my friends were like, you were sandbagging us. No, I wasn't.
You're like, you got the one.
I'd never before, not since.
Yeah. You got one. Hopefully they document it. Yeah. Speaking of turkeys, speaking of deep fried goods,
let's get the more birds, taco birds, baby.
We didn't get any more deep fried birds up in Clemson this weekend. But I was at the game.
Gavin was a sleeper cell
I was
up
at
in
the
Clemson.
Game. So you know ETV, we're right across the street from Williams-Brice Stadium, USC Stadium. So by proximity, I have to become somewhat of a USC
fan.
Well,
you live here.
And,
also.
Well, I also go to the
you
tailgate.
You live six
so
minutes
much,
away from the stadium.
Just tell you how much easier it is to tailgate here than
oh,
it is
my God.
To
it's,
go to Clemson.
It's a single lane road into there. It's garbage.
I had to take a lot of deep breaths. I was doing my best. I think I was positive, but the hardest part, the weekend was we were leaving. We stayed in Greenville. We got a great Airbnb in Greenville. We're like, oh, we'll make this work. We'll leave at 7:30. Still okay.
A.M.
Noon game. A.M. Yeah, after a long night.
That
stupid.
Sounds terrible. That sounds terrible.
We're like, hey, we're dying. Let's pop into Bojangles. I love a Bojangles biscuit.
Mm-hmm.
Keeps me going. You think, okay, easy peasy.
Not sponsored.
We'll do it. Sure enough, we go to the one in Easley, and I guess this is the one everyone's buying all their tailgate biscuits from, because we're in line. I've never really seen a line this long. And I said, let's go in, because drive-thru always
messed over. It was a Chick-fil-A line.
Basically, but a Chick-fil-A line will move, and they know how to operate there. This Bojangles was like, we run out of biscuits. And we're like, how?
More like no jangles.
Yeah.
No jangles.
So they stopped, they paused orders inside the restaurant and opted to continue like helping out the drive-thru, because that still moved. Then you had a bunch of people picking up these massive orders. Ugh. All we want was a biscuit here. Yeah. 45 minutes later, I ended up with chicken tenders and fries, which I spent too much money on, which I was mad about. I'm like, I just want two biscuits for $5.
I'm surprised at this stories, Gavin.
It was just brutal. They said, so we're like, can we? They're like, oh, yeah, you guys can't order yet. There's about to be a mutiny in this Easley Bojangles. We got it. We moved on. We shook it off, but we tried to be positive about it.
Hashtag
but then, you know, And then you got to the, then you have to slog through these back roads in Clemson. We found our parking spot. Fortunately, we had a decent one. And then I got to meet up with some good old friends. You know, I ended up in someone's box, which was interesting.
Very nice.
We went to the Esso Club. We were hanging outside. It felt very opera-ski.
Now, that's a gas station, right?
It's a gas station. I didn't really understand a bit. We had a great spot. You could watch some of the game. I was, like, sunning myself like a turtle. And then I'm like, hey, guys, it's after halftime. I have not been into Death Valley, quote, unquote.
Quote, unquote.
I've been to Death Valley, folks. It's in Baton Rouge.
Uh-huh.
LSU Tigers.
Thank you, yeah. Other Tigers.
I got to see the marching band. That was exciting. We got to tailgate some great people. Some good friends are up there. You just run into people, which I love. But we managed to get into a box.
Mm-hmm.
And then, even though I was wearing a orange polo shirt under my Carhartt jacket.
Your heart.
Because I was also wearing tights because it was in the 30s under my pants, freezing.
Yes. Only under your pants was
it. It was hard to celebrate that win when you were in ground zero. And everyone's like,
no better place to win one than like, in their house.
And you got a couple of drinks going. And you're
I'm
going to
say, go Birds for the Gamecocks.
Keep it inside.
It would have been hard not to cheer. I gotta be
respectful.
As a fashion council sitting member.
Yeah, very difficult decision here. Yeah, I know.
What is the deal with orange and purple? Like that, I don't like that combo. Some about it hits my eye wrong. I don't like it. Also,
orange, like those are colors I just do not purchase. Period.
You say that as a man wearing orange currently.
You gave me this vest.
I did give you that.
It's a Hunter orange vest on the inside and then camo on the outside.
Yeah, I bought that at a Lobsterman warehouse in Maine.
I know the man that needs his vest.
Another thing, you know what? Remember when there was a shortage of Carhartt in the world? You know where it all was? Jonesport, Maine, in the middle of nowhere. Another weird thing to me about the Clemson like traditions is their special rock that they touch.
Howard's Rock, which in our box had a duplicate of Howard's Rock, which I was touching.
I can't tell you as an outsider how lame that is.
Does it come from Death Valley itself?
I don't. This is our special rock that we touch. Like
people are gonna like. People are going to be coming for this
Please
episode.
Please call in and tell me why
say, I was like, oh, I couldn't get enough of Twitter, and I had said, I got to stop tweeting because people are going to be getting mad at me.
Mm.
But I just love, we all love a good in-state rivalry. It was fun.
Yes, it's a real
back
blood
and forth.
Feud.
And we all kind of knew it was coming because the Gamecocks have had such a big season this year that I was like, ooh, this could be a good one.
Yeah.
And then you saw like Sir Big Spur on like the Tiger Paw on the field.
Lenora Sellers, bro.
Like,
Lenora Sellers is a star. I hear he's a listener. We love him. If you want to be on the show, Lenoris, we'll let you talk about anything you want, okay?
Yeah,
come on, talk about laces.
I'll have to learn about it. Yeah, well, depends if it's part of their NIL deal. They won't come on here if they're not getting NIL.
Come on
out of
it. And explain football to Gavin.
I got to know some people on the Gamecocks.
Yeah,
I know the coaches,
six,
and that's about it.
Number eight, who knows?
Go team, go state.
All you need to know is 16, Lenoris Sellers. He's a stud. I think we need to end it there.
Everyone was a winner. Go team.
Yeah,
go
team.
Go South Carolina.
Mostly the Birds. Go Birds. Go Gamecocks.
They didn't
go Birds and Eagles
this year. So
I don't know how much luckier I could get. Six straight weeks of Eagles and Gamecocks wins.
And then they marched.
Is a real glut.
And
of
they marched
good
in the
luck.
And they marched in the Macy's Day Parade. I mean, how
that
exciting
was great
for them.
Too.
Was
they
so
were good. I literally watched that dumb wet parade for that whole thing, and it was worth it in the end. Oh, the brands that I saw. Anyway, Gavin, say goodbye. Say goodbye.
So many good brands. Again, folks, thanks for listening. Again, we have no allegiances here. We do love both Clemson and USC. In fact, I had two professors on the episode for that reason. For that reason. No, just kidding. But let us know how you feel. 803-563-7169. There are winners and losers in life, and, well, we can't always win. You can always stay up to date with the latest news on SCTV.org and SouthCarolinaPublicRadio.org, and don't forget to support your local newspapers. The South Carolina Lead is a production of South Carolina Public Radio. Our producer is A.T. Shire. Amy Crouch is our supervising producer. Sean Birch is our executive producer. This podcast is produced with support from PRX and is made possible in part by a grant from the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, as well as listener contributions to the DV Endowment of South Carolina. For the South Carolina Lead, I'm Gavin Jackson. Be well, South Carolina.
Quite frankly, Rena, many people are saying it.
You're the cutest baby. In fact, you are the cutest baby.
Quite frankly, you're the best, most cutest baby.
I don't know what they're telling you at school, but I'm telling you, goo goo gaga.